Bill's story in the big book. It was a cold November day in 1934 when he was sitting at home, congratulating himself that he had enough gin to last him for another 24 hours. He received a telephone call from an old drinking buddy of his. He invited him out to the house, and he thought, well, that'll be fine. I don't have to drink secretly now. We can drink in the open. But when this old drinking buddy of his came, he was sober. And he gave Bill some ideas. I believe that he had been in the Oxford group, and he gave Bill some ideas that later when Bill sobered up, they began to put those ideas together, and out of this great thing came AA. We have that man with us today that made that call on Bill. He now lives in Dallas, Texas, and we give you Ebbie Thatcher.
Well, my name is Ebbie. Oh, camel again. Switch brand or something. My name is Ebbie, and I'm certainly an alcoholic. I'm going to try to give you briefly a rundown on the events that preceded the time when this organization became known as Alcoholics Anonymous. That is, insofar as I saw it. As Kenneth told you, it was in 1934 that I went to see Bill. I had been living in Vermont. We had a home up there. My family and my father and mother were dead, and the house was vacant. The rest of the brothers were married and living elsewhere. And I was living there alone. Alone with a lot of bats. We used to have some sessions at night. I'd chase those bats around. I was drunk most of the time. I got in trouble with the law on two occasions. And one day, as I was moping around the house, I'd been trying to paint it. But it got so I couldn't get up beyond the third rung of that ladder. And I gave that up as a bad job, and I just back in the bottle again. Well, these two fellas dropped in to see me. And I'd known both of them, and I'd drunk with both of them. I don't think that you could call them really alcoholics, but they were heavy drinkers. Paul and crazy, both of them. And they'd had trouble in life. They'd lost their money, and they'd become interested in the Oxford group. And they sat down and talked to me, and they just talked fundamentals about God. They opened right up about it. They said Father Debbie Thatcher had been running his life long enough, and how about turning over to a higher power? And many things they told me, and left literature and indoctrination I later got from the Oxford group, the things that we see today in AA. Various sayings and the principles and logic, I think. A great deal of it came from the Oxford group. Well, I made a deal with a painter, a boss painter, and he sent me around a man and some equipment. I sobered up, and after about 10 days, the two of us painted the house. It was a pretty good-sized house, a lot of trim on it. And then, as soon as that job was over, I went right back to model again. And I got in trouble with the law for the third time. And I was taken down to the county seat, some 20 miles away, on a Friday, and I was told to come back on Monday. The judge said, I haven't got time to try it today. I'll set you trial on Monday. Because three times in 1 year I've been arrested in the state of Vermont, they have demanded a 6-month sentence from the state prison. So, of course, he didn't want to give me that name. He happened to be the father of one of the men who came to see me. In the meantime, a third man had been around there, and he appeared Monday when I went down for trial. So the judge released me under my own recognizance. Of course, they had it all cut and dried with this guy beforehand. He took me under his wing. I went back to the house, and we closed up the house, and I went down to stay with him nearby the village. He had a summer home there. I stayed there a couple of weeks. We were around, and I got some people up from New York, and it was only about 10 days after I got sober that I went out and spoke 5 times in 1 weekend. I don't know what I talked about. But I did feel that somehow a weight had been lifted from my shoulders. When I was with this octopus of alcohol, and I was for 3 years and 7 months, but I slipped again later on. And as most of you know, I've had recurring trouble off and on. But after that weekend trip around, I went to New York, and I stayed for a month with one of the two men who came to see me first, and then I went to live in a mission which was run by Calvary Episcopal Church under Oxford Group principles. There were 12 of us in there called the Brotherhood, and I was one of the 12 put in there to help run the place. And we had room for about 30 men to come in nightly, and then we had a meeting every night, a regular religious mission meeting. And there, I circulated around the daytime. I didn't have a regular job. I circulated around. I went down to Wall Street, and then I found out that Bill was in trouble, drinking. I'd known Bill for a number of years, known him since about 1911. And in 1912, we went to school together up there in Vermont for 1 year. And Bill and I had been fast friends. Of course, he married a girl that I had known all my life, Lois, his wife, for summer. For the summer residence of the same town that my people were summer residents. And I had grown up with her. And I saw Bill off and on, of course, 3 years afterwards. We only got drunk together once, and that's when he landed in Albany, my hometown, called me up, and I took him out. I had to be playing around with some flyers at the time who were out of the airport, sort of barnstorming. It was Saturday night, and Bill was going on up to East Dorset, and I had the brilliant idea, why not get a plane, and I'd go up with him. So we landed the plane right there on the spot. And the next day we got up there, at least we fell out of the plane. I certainly feel sorry for that pilot, because he had 2 drinks on his head, which is not much fun up in the air. Well, I determined that maybe Bill would be ready for something like the Oxford Group. I was only sober a little over a month, possibly 6 weeks. But sometimes I think we do some of our most effective work in the early stages. Our enthusiasm is on fire. And later on, I think sometimes we lose that enthusiasm, although we may be just as stable. But anyway, I got over to see Bill, and as you heard, I had a talk with him. And he didn't sober up that day, but that night he walked the subway with me at 1 o'clock. In the morning, and he said, I don't know what you got, old boy, but he said, I want it. But he didn't sober up for 3 or 4 days. And then he came over and spoke. And if anybody could tell me when our bunch drifted away from the exact date when we drifted away from the Oxford Group and formed Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd like to meet that man, because Bill and I don't know. It is very hard to figure that the dates back there, none of us ever kept any records. And you go back 25 years, and you can't be accurate on the thing. I know, since I left New York, Bill wrote me a letter one time and asked me if I knew what we did the first Christmas, because the grapevine wanted a story on. I can't tell, Lois can't tell, or if I don't know whether I went home to Albany for Christmas, or whether I stayed with the Wilsons, or what. So if you go back, probing back in your memory 25 years, it's pretty hard to make any accurate statement. You all know that Bill went to Akron and contacted Dr. Bob Smith. And Bill and Dr. Bob went ahead and formed the nucleus of what is now Alcoholics Anonymous, while I fell by the wayside. April of 1937. I'm not going to attempt to say why. I think I can realize what it is, but it is awfully hard to put in words. But I've had trouble off and on all through the years. If I wanted to sit down and sum up the month that I've been sober, I can probably account for 16 or 17 years of sobriety out of the last 25. But they're not all strung out of that here consecutively. Since I've been here in Texas, and I've been in Texas, I first had 13 months when I first came, nearly off the beam, and away I went. And it didn't get too bad, Bill, thanks to Bill Decker, the sheriff, from his county jail. The city jail, I worked for the city, the county, the city, without any intermission at all. I just get out of me, pick me up again, and back and go. Believe me, you can't look crosswise at a drink and balance, you get in the jail. And I haven't had anything to drink since. 6 years, about 7 or 8 months. But somebody here last night, I won't say who it was, approached me with the idea that so much is said and done and written for the new man would very well for the person who has trouble. Off and on. Especially for the old graybeards or bleeding dickens or whatever you want to call them. Certainly I can qualify to talk out of that thing, but I don't know that I can give you any information that's valuable. I sometimes think that the reason we stay drunk so long, people who have had a long record of sobriety and then fall off, is first our pride is hurt. I think that's one of the biggest things. We're not so sorry that we hurt somebody or that, but we are sorry that wonderful record that we have is gone. And I think it just sort of galls us to believe that we can't get up and be the little bit of a big operator we've been. That's just one third. I mean, second, of course, is the fact that when you started one of those things, that little old devil that's still in me, and always will be, I guess, till I die, says, well, now that you have started this thing, you might just as well make a go out of it. And that's exactly what you do, I believe. You keep it up. As you know, physically, as the years go on, when you've had a layoff for 10 years, you're going to have one awful time getting back in shape again. There's no question about that. I don't have trouble daily or every few days the way some people say they do about taking a drink or wanting to take a drink. It does come back once in a while, sometimes in the springtime or in the fall. I don't know if it's a change of seasons or what. You got to play on that something. You know, as old Omar Khayyam said, come fill the cup, and in the fire of the spring, you win a garment of repentance swing. And I always used to believe in that. If it comes spring, and I hadn't had it, if I'd been on the wagon a few months, I had to have my spring drunk. So I'll look to that. But I don't know just what makes us fall off the wagon after to drink again after we have been sober for a number of years. It is undoubtedly due to wrong thinking, and that wrong thinking can sneak in sometimes and get so set in your mind that you don't recognize it. I know that I've had a number of drunks that I look back on now and know that I was drunk mentally a long time before I took a drink. And that comes on me every once in a while. I desire, first thing you know, I'm thinking along the lines of taking a drink. And so far, I say for 5 years, me and my father, I've been able to think the thing through and know exactly what's going to happen. I can almost, like, go through a bunch of doors. You go through one door and another door and another, and each one getting worse all the time. More terror and more trouble and more fears. You wind up in the same old spot. And all they get loses faith for the time being and reach for a drink. But there's one thing sure. I can't say that you will get the breaks if you sober up. No man can say that. Sometimes nobody does get the good breaks. But certainly you will not be able to take advantage of them if you're drunk. But if you're sober, and they do come along, then you're able to handle them according to your own ability. But not if you're drinking. I'd like to just briefly, I'm not a long-winded speaker, I know it was. I just briefly like to tell you how I got to Texas. One of these same men came to see me, the Oxford group, one of the first two, has been living in Paris for some years. And there was a man from New York, Charlie Milton, was over there on business and pleasure combined. And he went to a small AA meeting in Paris, France one night and ran into this fellow. And this fellow said, "How's old Levy doing?" And he said, "I don't know old Levy. From what I hear, he's not doing. He just ain't doing at all." So he said, "Well," he said, "he's waiting in New York," the sort of fellow said. He said, "I know that." He says, "The bunch are down on him, whether that's right or not." He says, "Doesn't matter into what they are. They're not trying to help him or for him." And he says, "He's under a blanket of despair down there. And see if you can't do something when you go back and get him out of New York." And the guy said he would. And those were not mere words. I was drinking at the time, and I dropped into the AA intergroup. I'm licking the manual every once in a while, sometimes just to make a touch. I'll be perfectly honest. Other times, just to sit down and get my wind and figure out where I was going for the day. Now, I was trying to get back. I was trying to get back in AA, but I just didn't have any reason for living, any reason, anything to keep me going. And one of the girls, Hazel Rice, she was then secretary, she's now in the central office, the general service, said to me, she says, "By golly, I think I know somebody can help you, Levy. He's got something for you." She went to the phone, called this guy, and he says, "Hold him there, I'll be down." So he came down at 5 o'clock, and the first word, he says, "What do you drink?" Well, I said, "I've been drinking over here on 3rd Avenue." And he said, "Let's go." And of course, those are pleasant words, and I'm feeling the way I was. And we went over there, and he bought me a couple of whiskeys, and he sat down at the table, and he said, "How'd you like to go to Texas?" And Texas is far out from my thoughts, that's right. I assure you. So he said, "Well," he says, "he's not going to do any good here in New York. He's going to die eventually. He's going to go to Texas." Well, I made all the excuses. I said, "They've got a water down there. The cattle are dying. Everything's wrong. I have any clothes. They're broke." And he said, "We can fix up that under," he says. "Well," I said, "I don't know." Well, he said, "Here's $5. He says, "I'll see you tomorrow at the same time." He saw me tomorrow at the same time. I'd given him some thought, but I guess I was still thinking more about getting the $5 again the next night. Which I did. I got it. It was the same story. And that was Thursday night. And he said, "Now, no more." He said, "But I'll be at my apartment." He gave me the number and the phone. "And if you want to make up your mind to go to Texas," he said, "we can do it." So I didn't see him Friday night. I nursed that $5 along. I had enough to eat, enough to sleep. Flop, they call it. But I began to think that maybe that's the wisest thing to do, is to get out of New York. I might just walk it down and die down there. I'd die on the streets of New York. So I wandered around that Saturday morning and said, "All right, let's get cleaned up." And he took me up in his apartment and sent the suit out and got it pressed and gave me some clean underwear and got some shirts and bought some shirts. And he called up Dallas and got over to Lancaster and always said, "Send me Yankee son of a bitch down." I know that's what he said because he always got a booming voice and I was right alongside the telephone. And so Sunday night, Charlie loaded me on the non-stop plane for Dallas. I'm telling you, I didn't have a drink. And I learned afterwards that he had a pint of whiskey and then give it to me. physically. I run away now. He said, I'm going to tell you, he saw me. And that's been a great help to me. And for a long time, I really didn't realize that I was in Texas. I had having hallucinations all over the place for 2 or 3 weeks. It was really rough. I think there's another guy that came up and spoke to me that saw me down in the clinic that I had at that time. And I really didn't know myself where I was going to make it. I was afraid the old noggin had really snapped. But with time and patience, I came out of it. And I said to me, I'm grateful. I must express my appreciation to the people down there who were patient with me in Dallas and for Charlie Milton, who really did something. He acted. He did AA. He didn't talk it. He really did it. He came to see me and it cost him money to send me down. And he went ahead and did it. And I think I've tried to prove that he didn't do it in vain. I know that I probably would have died within 6 months in New York in that situation, or been committed somewhere forever. You know, I'll get out if I hadn't come down here. I'm grateful to those people who did it, and to all you people here. I certainly enjoyed coming up here this weekend. Enjoyed the party last night. It was a lot of fun. Excellent food, too, by the way. And I think that's about all I can say. Thank you.